Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company. Your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Well, I am so excited to have Dr. Judy Jasek back. As you might have noticed, I've been doing some replays with Dr. Jasek this week because Dr. Jasek's mom passed away. So you've been gone, Dr. Jasek, and we're so sorry to hear about your loss, but what a wonderful life. Your mom lived to 100. That is amazing.
She would have been 101 in November. So,
wow.
You know, yeah, she had an amazing life. And, you know, the end, it was, you know, relatively quick and peaceful for her. She did suffer a fall. She had a subdural hematoma. So she had a bleed in her brain that she didn't recover from and she was deteriorating. So we opted for hospice care and she was, you know, very peaceful, kept very comfortable. And, you know, my family came out, she was surrounded by family and was not suffering. And it was sudden. I mean, that only took a few days, you know, for her to pass under those circumstances. But, you know, I think all things considered, it's what she would have wanted. You know, wasn't in pain for a long period of time. Thankfully, we were like able to, you know, be there with her. This wasn't the days of COVID when you couldn't go visit people in the hospital. That was always one of my greatest fears, is that mom would, you know, be lying in a hospital bed all by herself, you know, because nobody could visit. And thankfully that wasn't the case. And I'll have to say, you know, I hear a lot of scary things about people going to the hospital these days. The hospital my mom was in, they were amazing. Everybody was so caring. I mean, they'd bring snacks and drinks for the family. You know, they were taking care of us as much as taking care of her. And everybody was very, you know, sensitive to the situation and very kind. And that was a good experience. Gave me some hope in humanity and healthcare because it was very good. You know, they just took care of mom. You know, they'd come in and they'd wash her face and put chapstick on. And she was not aware at this point. I mean, she could probably still hear some things, but she wasn't responsive. But they still took care of her, respected her dignity, you know, took care of the family. So I was very impressed by that.
You know, that's always at this stage in our lives when we're getting, you know, this age, then you have to deal with, you know, the aging of the parents, and that is so hard. But your mom is 100. My mom is going to be, or she was going to be 101. My mom is going to be 80 this year. So she's spring chicken, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm always like, mom, you're good. Get out there. You know, Dr. Jasek's mom.
Yeah.
101. So we're going to use that as a benchmark. But, you know, and I don't know if it's homeopathy or if it's the yin and yang of, you know, whatever they call it. But they talk about the chi in your liver has 100 years. Have you heard that?
No, I've never heard that. No.
I heard that the other day and I thought about your mom. And I don't know what video I was watching, but they were saying, if you take good care of yourself, your body is actually, you know, has 100 years of energy, you know, like in the liver. And so I was wondering about that, but I don't know. It's just something I heard, but I thought that was cool. And your mom was so aware and still so cognitively engaged at 100.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's amazing. Imagine what we could do in the next 20 years, Dr. Jasek.
Oh my gosh. Well, and I, you know, I should have another 40 if I live to be as old as my mom. You know, I got a whole other career I could do, you know?
Yes. You could be a hula hoop dancer.
And I don't know that I want to do that, but, you know, but it's nice to, you know, be able to entertain options knowing that I might be around for a while. But you know, mom was a doer. You know, she liked to, I mean, she was very independent and liked to be self-sufficient and figured out ways to take care of herself. It's really just been in the last few years that she's, you know, had to be in like assisted living where she, you know, couldn't take care of herself as much as she would have liked to, but she maintained on her own till she probably 96, 97 years old before she had to go into a facility, you know, like an assisted living. So she did really well, but I think it was because she pushed herself. You know, she didn't just sit around. I mean, she was always trying to keep moving and keep doing things. You know, she was a go-getter. So it's use it or lose it. Age isn't an excuse, but if you don't use your faculties, you'll lose them.
That must be where you get it. And when you go hiking, go camping, you get out and you do, you know, and you get away from just the business, right? And certainly the business, my business, your business, we love what we do, mm-hmm. but you do have to get away from your business. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I finally committed, Dr. Jasek, that I would hike every night with Rick.
Wow.
And I've done it.
A new leaf.
I've turned over a new leaf. And so I've done it three times now. So, you know, I gotta keep going. And we've been getting up and going to the gym. So, you know, Rick is always been more into, you know, staying fit and doing all that and staying on track. And I get lost in, you know, doing podcasts or doing videos or working on the business. Nah, I'm not going to go. You go without me. So I finally committed. I'm doing it.
So, good for you. Good for yeah. you. Physical activity. You know, I tell you during this time when like mom was in the hospital and, you know, through just making funeral arrangements and all of this, you know, it's not an easy time. And I love to run. You know, I get up in the morning and I get up early anyway. And, you know, I would just get up and like, okay, I got to get up, even though I'd be kind of tired because I wasn't sleeping all that well. I got to get out for a run and move my body. And I'm just going to feel so much better for the rest of the day. And you do, you've got to move your body. And I think it helps with stress. It helps with your mental attitude. You know, you can focus better. It's important. And getting outside. I love to exercise outside. So,
you know, and I think that's so important for the dogs too, right? To get exercise. And I'm not sure that our dogs today are getting as much exercise as they need. Right. And, it's just really, really important whether yeah. you have a small dog, whether you have a large dog. I mean, they got it. Can you imagine they're just sitting in the house all day? They're just yeah. kind of looking at four
walls.
And
then people wonder why they're, you know, anxious or chew stuff up or, you know, getting into trouble. It's like, yeah, you got to get them out and do dog stuff, you know? And I see like, you know, people bring young dogs in sometimes that are like afraid to get on our scale because it's a little bit slippery, you know, if they're in there, uncertain, but you know, things like that, you know, get, you know, you could build like a small agility course, just probably where you live, you know, just have a few things, some different textures, get your dogs, you know, engaging their mind and body together where they're like, oh, this is different. You know, I'm not used to walking on this surface, or you do a little teeter totter or something like that. So they're engaging their mind and body together. And I think dogs really enjoy that. Then it ends up being a positive thing and they're getting stronger. And then you can take them places and they don't freak out every time they, you know, they see something new. I don't think dogs are meant to just lay around.
No. And I've said this before, and I was watching Lazi this morning. You know, she has to go out and do work before she gets to eat. Mm. Right. And really, if you look at, the way that dogs were when they were in the wild, they have to work for their food, right? They don't just get to sit around. Somebody serves them. Now I get it. They're domesticated and all that kind of stuff, but she actually has to go out. We have an A-frame. So she has to go up the A-frame and down the other side. And it's pretty tall. I mean, it's probably 7 feet tall.
No, that's pretty tall.
There's a, there, maybe it's 8 feet. I don't know what it is actually, but then there's a jump and she has to jump over that. So you throw the wooden, dumbbell and she has to pick that up, jump back over. So this is all part of getting her title, right? And the foosing where she has to look at Rick when he's walking. There's just a lot of things that she has to do. And she knows that this is funny because she knows I get to eat. If I just do all this right, I get to eat, which is probably not the best thing. But because she, when it's done, she's like running around, you know, the acreage and all the way back up. She's like, woohoo, I did it. But yeah, so, and she goes hiking with us. The other thing that Rick does is he makes her wear goggles when she hikes because we're up there in the sun. Yeah. Now, she doesn't like that, Dr. Jasek. She's not crazy about these goggles, but I think from Rick's standpoint, he's a little bit worried about PANIS. What do you think about that? Do you think that goggles on a dog, and certainly when it's, you know, snowing and you've got the sun, but do you think that the sun is really responsible for PANIS in dogs, or do you think it's some type of toxin that goes in their body?
You know, that's a really good question, because I've thought about this a lot, you know, because PANIS basically is like an autoimmune condition because it's a response to immunosuppressive drugs. When dogs get PANIS, which looks like the eye looks really red, and it's usually kind of in the outside corners of the eyes. And it looks like there's these blood vessels growing across the top of the eye. It's very vascular, and it just sort of grows across the eye, and it can start to obstruct vision. If you don't treat it, it can like scar the eye. You can have some permanent damage, but usually it can be controlled. And the school of thought is that it's worse in the UV light. I don't know for sure that's been proven. But I do, you know, so for autoimmune disease, first of all, we think about proper nutrition, what, you know, the effects of vaccines. So I would, you know, wonder about that. You know, you mentioned toxins. Well, vaccines are a toxin, as far as I'm concerned.
No.
So yeah.
Say it isn't so.
Really? I'm not kidding. And so is it something like that? And so, but if the immune system is disrupted, then say it's already been triggered by something like a vaccination, then maybe they could be more sensitive to the light. But if they never had that exposure to the, you know, to the vaccine, something that was toxic, would they have that same sensitivity to the light? I mean, I don't think anybody's ever like exactly studied that, but you know, how do wolves live outside? They're not running around with goggles. I don't think they go to the gift store at Yellowstone and buy little cool little goggles to wear when they're chasing their elk. I mean, you know, so it kind of makes me wonder, well, there's always more to the picture, but you know, what's the real cause? And so show me a dog that's not been vaccinated. And I mean, probably never, because even one vaccine can disrupt the normal immune system. You know, a dog that's never been vaccinated, raw fed, and gets PANIS. Then I might believe that, you know, this altitude thing is the primary cause, but I think it could be a contributing factor, but I think there's going to be more to the picture.
Maybe they just want to sell goggles for dogs. And so they created this narrative. I don't know.
But I don't know either.
I want to ask you this. Do you see a certain breed of dog that gets PANIS more than others?
Oh, we see it a lot in German Shepherds.
Yeah. What is up with that? So we hear about German Shepherds getting itchies. I mean, you know, we have a lot of German Shepherds in our customer base. I think primarily because, well, there's a lot of German Shepherds out there, but number two, our logo is Asta. My German Shepherds do not itch, Dr. Jasek, and there's a vast difference, I think, between what I do as far as a health protocol versus the normal. But do you think there's something that's going on with German Shepherds?
I think any breed that gets popular, you know, and German Shepherds have gotten popular, and they get overbred and bred not bred responsibly, I guess would be the thing. You know, they just get overbred, or they look for certain characteristics in the show ring, like with shepherds, that just so messed them up was this sloping back, mm-hmm. you know, this mm-hmm. kind of almost crouching stance that somebody decided they wanted to see in the show ring. I have no idea why, because that's what led to so much hip dysplasia, was that look, but that it caused the hips to be malformed. Well, when you're breeding for certain characteristics like that, what else is going along with that characteristic genetically? And, you know, so a lot of times when they're bred for a certain thing, like as I have another example, in collies, they started breeding for these long, skinny noses, like a full-size, you don't see too many full-size collies anymore. You see a full-size collie, these really long, skinny noses, like somebody decided they wanted that look. Well, that made their eyes really tiny and it predisposed them to a disease of the optic nerve and the dogs are going blind, you know? So that was linked to the long skinny nose. The two, you know, went together. So what's linked to some of the things that German Shepherds have been bred for, you know? And I don't know that, you know, I cannot tell you 100% that there's a genetic link between, you know, the way they stand, the slope stance and hip dysplasia and the eyes, but it sure makes me wonder if there's a genetic predisposition. And then because Panis seems to be autoimmune, it would still take a trigger. So there's like a genetic predisposition, but then if they're never triggered, so say you have a dog that's genetically predisposed to Panis, but it never gets a vaccine and it's raw fed. So it's on a really good diet that's not inflammatory. Maybe that would never express, you know, even though they could have that predisposition, but you take that same dog and over vaccinate them and feed them a kibble diet, and they probably are going to get Panis, which then can be, you know, probably exacerbated by the UV light. I mean, I think once a dog has Panis, it is important to keep them out of the bright sun and not take them out midday. But I kind of question that the UV light alone is a primary cause.
Yeah, because there's so many dogs that are climbing 14ers that don't have Panis.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of people have their dogs out in the mountains and a lot of people live at high elevation and don't have goggles on their dogs. So I really don't think it's just the UV radiation. I do think there's more to the picture.
Yeah. And also, you know, on these itchy dogs. So I had a customer called and oh my gosh, Dr. Drasik, she literally was in tears when she found out it was me. And she said, I just want to let you know, because of the podcast that you and Dr. Jasek do, you guys have changed my dog's lives. And she started crying. And Rick and I are like, oh my gosh, I'm going to start crying too. You know, but she was just so sweet. And we hear that a lot, that they didn't know that there's not a whole lot of places that you can get the other side of the story. Yeah. So I just wanted to let you know that I think that the information that we are getting out there, is helping some dogs. So, that's why we do this, but
absolutely.
But she has a German Shepherd, and the German Shepherd has only been on raw 2 months. Okay. And she said, he's still itching. Should I do the Yeasty Beast protocol? I said, well, let me, you know, and I wasn't in a position where I could actually, I was getting ready to go into a meeting. So I sent her an email with a lot of questions, you know, and the questions are the same questions that we always have. Are we just feeding food without all these other additives? Are, you know, the treats, what's the vaccine history? What's the, have you had, you know, allergy suppressant drugs, all of that stuff. And I haven't really gotten a reply back yet, but I don't think that 2 months or 8 weeks is long enough on a raw diet yet. Right. In order to change maybe what has been put in the body before. But my question to you is this. So she was doing probiotics. I don't think that the Yeasty Beast can hurt a dog. But again, you and I take a very minimal approach in the beginning. Would you tell this customer, hey, let's try this. Let's try adding more organs. Okay. A little more organs to the diet. Let's have the vitamin D level checked and let's get some omega-3s in there. What else would you say?
Yeah. And maybe do some more for gut support. Cause I always think that, You know, when we have skin issues, we probably, if we have inflamed skin, we probably have an inflamed gut. And the thing about the yeast is, yes, dogs get yeast overgrowth on their skin, but it's always secondary to the inflammation. Yeast spores are everywhere in the environment. They're there just looking for a location to grow. And the reason they start to grow on the skin is the skin gets inflamed and the local immune system is compromised. And then the yeast have this nice, you know, environment that they like to set up housekeeping. But so if you don't eliminate that underlying inflammation, you might get some temporary relief from treating the yeast, but you're not going to have a long-term solution. So I would be more inclined to, you know, yeah, you could, you know, manipulate the diet, but then also maybe do some things for leaky gut and reducing inflammation in the gut. And then we do, you know, we do a lot with Chinese herbs, which help correct imbalances in the body. So we're looking at patterns in the body, and the herbal blends can help correct some of those imbalances. But it does take time. Once we have inflamed skin for whatever reason, unless you're just doing suppressive medicine, so you're doing steroids or Epoquil or Cytopoint shots or something like that, it's going to take several months to, I mean, sometimes we have results faster, but it certainly can take several months to see true results from these natural protocols. But then once things improve, it's solid. Like, we've resolved what's going on with the pet, and you're not going to be treating it on an ongoing basis, or, you know, you might have some mild flare-ups, but the symptoms will be greatly reduced.
Let me ask you a question on the Cytopoint and the Apoquil, which are, you know, immunosuppressants, right? Can that cause autoimmune disease?
You know, I think anything that disrupts normal immune system function can contribute to autoimmune disease. Absolutely. Now, this is suppressing it, but you're basically just shutting it off. You're not allowing the immune system to do its job naturally. And then as soon as you take them off of those kinds of, you know, kinds of drugs, and you alleviate that suppression, it's like you're holding down a spring, and then all of a sudden you take your hand away, and boing, there goes the spring bouncing all over the place. And I think that's what can happen with the immune system. It doesn't know anymore what's friend or foe, because you've just been suppressing its function. And the immune system is like, it's continually being educated as to what's in the environment and adapting to what's in the environment. And when you just suppress all of that, you are really running a risk of never getting proper immune system function back. And I've seen this happen with some of these drugs like Apoquil. I try to get dogs off of them, and they all just have these strong rebound effects. You start to get them off of it, and they'll always start itching like mad for a period of time until that immune system can kind of wake up again and, you know, get re-educated on what it's supposed to be reacting to.
Yeah. So it's heal the gut, heal the gut, heal the gut. Would you say that would be correct?
I would say that would definitely be a next step. If you're not seeing response to just the diet change, I'd work on the gut.
Yeah, let's give it a little bit of time. You know, I so remember this customer of ours 4 years ago. This dog just, she turned to raw. The dog was on one of the, you know, immune suppressants. And it's a boxer, white, and so the skin was black, and she really was probably, I don't know how many weeks doing raw, and she called me, and she said, this is just not working. So I got to rehome this dog.
And
because I didn't get back with her like for 2 weeks, the dog turned the corner. She still has the dog today, and it's not in that itchy stage anymore. So it just took a while. Right. And so I think to expect to change the food and just immediately see, you know, this gut heal is a little stretched. You know, you got to give it some time. But I always think, what's the alternative, Dr. Jasek? You got a dog that's itching. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? What else are you going to feed them? Right.
Right. It's still the best thing. I think the thing is that it can definitely help. I mean, there's no question in my mind that it can help, but with the itching. But if the dog has been over vaccinated, or been on, you know, multiple pharmaceuticals that again have damaged gut function, it isn't just going to be a, you know, magic bullet, start them on the raw diet and all the, you know, skin stuff clears up. But if you don't put them on the raw diet, you aren't going to stand a chance of getting that result. If the raw diet isn't enough and we need to do other things, we're still going to have way better success with the pet on the raw diet. And if you start a raw diet, the pet's still itching. And a lot of people just go down the road, well, it must be the beef or it must be the turkey or it must be one of these proteins. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, if you can identify that correlation, like one particular protein you feed your dog, it itches a lot worse. Well, then don't feed that protein, obviously. But I still think that's a gut issue because I see a lot of dogs that, and I'll tell people, you know, like they do really well on one or two proteins, don't do so well on the others. We'll stick to the ones that the dog does best on, give it a month or so, and then try to reintroduce some of the other proteins because the digestion is getting stronger and we're the inflammation is being reduced, but it just takes time for all that inflammation in the gut to reduce and for the gut to get back to normal function. And so a lot of times what I see is over time, you can introduce some of these other proteins and they're fine on them. So that's why I don't think this knee jerk, oh, he's allergic to, you know, XYZ protein, whatever it was. And now I can never feed that again. And I hear people say that, well, they're allergic to that. Well, I think you need to keep reintroducing it. And as the gut heals, a lot of times they will tolerate more variety as time goes on.
Yeah. And I'm going to say it. I think I say it every podcast. What are the treats that you're giving your dog?
Yes. You know, what else is in the picture?
Yeah. Because we had a question from one of our long-term feeders about the dogs having loose stools, both of them. And we looked and 9 times out of 10, it's a treat. So I said, mm-hmm. What is the treat? Well, it's a special treat for puppies and it's supposed to be good for them. And I said, shoot me over the ingredients. Mm-hmm. Well, it was pure cane molasses. It was all these different mm-hmm. flowers and it had lots of different, I said, let's do this before you decide to pull that protein out of the diet. Can we just pull the treats out first and let's see if that fixes it. Mm-hmm. So I would always encourage you to, you know, it's so easy for pet parents just to go into wherever they go, right? Their favorite pet food store or wherever. And they pick up these treats because the front of the bag looks so great. It says organic or whatever. Mm-hmm. Turn that bag over. You've got to read those ingredients. And if it's more than one ingredient, dump it. Don't use it. All right. Here's another question that came in. I'm looking for support and resources for gallbladder issues like extra fluid and detox. Also for lymphomas, for my 23-pound pug mix. She just had an abdominal ultrasound and they saw fluid in or around her gallbladder. She also has many lymphomas. Am I saying that right?
Like lipomas is usually the way
I say it. Lipomas. See, I didn't go to med school. That's a problem. All right. So what are your thoughts on that? And that's all the information I have. Yeah. I don't believe this is one of, this is not one of my customers, but somebody that listens to the podcast.
Okay. So, that would be a case, like, I'd love to see like lab work too, and see what the liver function is like. And somebody says gallbladder issues. Well, what does that mean? Do we have a stone? Has there been an ultrasound? What's going on with the gallbladder? I mean, there's a lot of variables there, but I mean, I have to say pretty much across the board, I don't ever not start a fresh food diet, and most dogs will tolerate raw just fine. I would say a standard raw blend is not going to have too much fat. I know they really scare people into, oh, we got to feed these ultra low fat diets, but you don't want to overly restrict the fat. I mean, you don't want to feed, you know, extra fat. This wouldn't be a dog if the gallbladder is not functioning properly, because one of the things the gallbladder helps with, because it stores bile. And then when if the dog eats a higher fat meal, it contracts. And then the there's ingredient enzymes and stuff in there that help with the fat digestion. And so you won't want to feed a high fat diet, but the average raw blend isn't that high in fat. There's really no reason not, you know, not to feed, you know, a fresh raw food diet, as long as, you know, the dog, unless the dog doesn't tolerate it for some other reason, but that should be fine. And then as far as other support, you know, I'd need to see like everything that's going on. Was there an ultrasound done, blood work, you know, so that we have the whole picture. But then a lot of times there's herbs and other things that can help support that, you know, support the gallbladder and support that process so that it doesn't, you know, a lot of times they end up getting removed. And I don't know that that's always necessary either.
Yeah. So what causes fluid around the gallbladder?
Well, that would be some sort of inflammation. And that's where like getting the, you know, report from the, you know, I'm assuming that was on ultrasound. But so anytime their tissues are inflamed, a lot of times you'll get the fluid. So I would, you know, think about inflammation. And then we look at like all the causes of inflammation, starting with diet and treats. And was the pet vaccinated? What other pharmaceuticals is it on? You know, all those questions that we always ask, what other supplements is it on? Is there something that could be inflaming the body? And then eliminating anything in the routine, in the diet or supplements, anything like that, that might be inflammatory, start by eliminating that. And then, you know, maybe talk about some things that, you know, could actually help support gallbladder function.
Yeah. So you guys remember when you send in your questions, you guys really got to give us more information, because that really isn't enough information to say, all right, I just need a supplement that will help with that. Right. You could be just wasting your money. So, so let's see if you can get us some more information, and hopefully Erica, I'll give her this podcast and she will get in touch with you at ahavet.com. All right. Our last question today, Dr. Jasek, is, I have two pups on raw, again, not on our raw. This is somebody that listens to the podcast. She said they are thriving, but recently one of her pups with a known esophageal diverticulum started vomiting. So they went to the vet, had x-rays, and it looks like an accumulation of raw bone bits are the culprit. I'm assuming that the bone fragments came from his current raw food. So now I'm on a mission to find a raw food with the smallest, most finely ground bone. Now, the questions that we asked were, well, number one, we don't know what that blend is that she's feeding. But what we did find out is that she is doing extra raw meaty bones from the butcher, the femur bones. The femur bones are very hard. But my question is really this. Is that what she's seeing on the x-ray? And the esophageal diverticulum. Explain that to us. What is that?
So, yeah, and this is like, you know, one of those cases where it comes down to what's causing what. So a diverticulum is going to be a little pocket. Like you hear about people having diverticulitis in their colon. They have these little pockets and they'll tell them, don't eat like seeds,
chia seeds
or small seeds, because these seeds will sit in the diverticulum. So the problem is the diverticulum. And if these bone pieces are accumulating in there, you know, that could be an issue, but the diverticulum, that's the problem. And maybe that, you know, I mean, that would be a, like a surgical consult, but maybe that could be repaired. You know, that might be worth doing, because otherwise there's always the chance that something could get stuck there. So in the meantime, I mean, yeah, I'd be careful probably to only feed like ground bone. I don't see, I mean, I think any of the blends that I've seen, I mean, sometimes you might get a little bit bigger piece, but I don't think those pieces of bone typically cause much problem. Like we've talked about, if the bone's causing a problem, then there's a problem. If the ground bone's causing a problem, the problem is with the dog's digestion is not strong enough. to digest the bone. Or in this case, it has this diverticulum that the bones are accumulating in, and maybe that needs to be addressed. But I wouldn't deprive the dog of an appropriate diet because of the diverticulum. I mean, maybe the diverticulum needs to be fixed.
So where is that diverticulum? In the throat area?
Esophageal. That doesn't tell us where, but somewhere along the esophagus. So, you know, after you swallow, the esophagus is the tube that takes the food down into the stomach. So it's somewhere along the esophagus. There's a little outpouching. And these can occur elsewhere in the body too. We see them sometimes in the bladder and, you know, colon and places like that, but that's what it is. But there's always going to be the chance for something getting stuck in there. Not just bone in the food, but anything else that dog ingests. So it might be worth, depending on where it's located, it might be worth getting it fixed.
And what causes that?
Oh, it's probably something it was born with, just a genetic anomaly.
Wow. Now we do have, so the other part of her question was, she was considering salmon. Well, here's the problem I see with that in these type of situations, right? You don't want to just feed salmon,
right?
Right. You want to be able to feed these other blends. Now we do have some boneless blends. The problem is many of these boneless blends don't have organs in them. Mm-hmm. Right. So you want to make sure that they have organs. You can put the organs in there, and maybe you want to use the better bones, right? The better bones, which is a real bone, which is powder. But I just wanted to present that to you. And also, I'm wondering if the chewing on the femur bones is not a good idea.
Well, yeah, because those could be pretty sharp pieces if they got a piece. I mean, I don't recommend having dogs chew on femur, any of those marrow bones, for long periods of time, because they can chip their teeth on them. But if they, you know, bigger dogs might be able to get a piece off of one of those that was a little bit sharper, that might cause, you know, more of a problem. Or if they chew it down enough, and then there's like a bigger piece of it that they might swallow, that might cause more problems. But yeah, I recommend minimizing the amount of time dogs chew on those real hard bones.
Yeah. Travel bones, as we call them. Anything mm-hmm. that the, you know, the knuckles and the femurs and all that kind of jazz. But I would encourage all of you that send in your questions to do a consult with Dr. Jasek. She can certainly look at lab work. She can look at your x-rays, give you some advice on maybe what you want to do in regards to something like this esophageal diverticulum. So the words that are hard for me to say. It's so crazy. You'd think I could pronounce these words better, Dr. Jasek. It's just like,
you didn't go to doctor school. I'll tell you, that's what we learn, is just how to say these big words.
The emphasis is weird. It's the weird, you know, like it's on this syllable. And I'm just like, I don't, you know.
That's why doctors feel smart, because you know, you can pronounce all these words.
Yes, yes, yes. Hey, I do want to mention one other thing before we go. And of course, Lozzie has to bark and say hello to you guys. But remember, it's hot outside and super hot in certain parts of the country right now. Test the pavement with your own foot or your hand. One of our employees had to call, I don't know if it was the sheriff or who he had to call, because his dog was in the car with the windows totally rolled up, and the car didn't have any air conditioning on or anything like that. Yeah. And so that's not a good situation. You know, even if you're running in for just a second, guys, if it's 100 degrees outside, you can't do that. You know, our dogs don't even go with us when it's that hot. You know what I mean? Even 80 degrees.
Yeah.
You roll those windows up, or even just slightly roll down, Dr. Jasek, that's so dangerous.
Oh yeah. No, you can't do that unless you got one of these cars where you can leave the AC on and you're out of it. You know, I wouldn't. It just takes a few seconds for your car to heat up once you stop moving And especially if you have the windows rolled up, and dogs cannot cool their bodies efficiently. They can only pant, and it doesn't take very long for, you know, dogs to heat up to, for their temperatures to heat up to a dangerous level.
Yeah. And you know, if they start having tremors, if they start drooling, that excessive panting, maybe they're, you know, uncoordinated movement, your dog's probably, you know, experiencing some heat stroke going on. So you've got to get them in a cool place. And they always say, don't use super cold water, but you want to, you know, put some cool water on them all over the body as soon as you can. You know, put them in front of a fan or in some air conditioning, and make sure that, you know, your dog's okay. And they might have to take them in and get, you know, intravenous fluids going on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can't shock the body by going from super hot to super cold. But if you really feel like your dog's experiencing heat stroke, I would suggest getting it in, getting it, because basically you're not just cooling and rehydrating, but their bodies will go into shock. And so, you know, getting that initial care to stabilize them, treat the shock, is definitely a good idea.
You know, these, and we have them in our cars, you know, the, what are they called? The covers that go in the back seat, and they connect to the driver's seat and the passenger seat. A lot of those, Dr. Jasek, block the air conditioning from getting on your dog. And so I would say, get in the back seat. I think you need to sit.
Oh, yeah.
You need to sit in the back seat where your dog is, okay? And have your partner, husband or wife, drive you around and see how the heat comes in from the side windows. See it, what the airflow is into the back seat where you have these hammocks, right? Because I think that we're sitting in the front. We're getting this air blown on us. So it's a very different experience for your dog. And I really do think that you need to see what that is like so that you can adjust if needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Get back there and experience. But plus, your dog's wearing a fur coat and they don't sweat.
I know.
Put your winter coat on and go sit back there.
It's so hot. It's so hot everywhere right now. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
So think about your pets. Well, Dr. Jasek, we are, we're glad you're back. And we're so, you know, I'm happy that I got to go on this journey with you for a little while with your mom. I never met her, but I feel like I know her through you. Mm. And, just what a wonderful life. And, our condolences.
Thank you. Appreciate it. She had a long life. None of us get out of this alive. So it's going to happen to us eventually. And, you know, just live your life to the fullest, man. You never know when your day is coming. So make each one count.
That's right. That's why I'm getting out there and I'm going to hike tonight.
There you go. Good for you.
All right, everybody, get over to ahavet.com. Dr. Judy Jasek can help you in all things pet health. She can give you another side, a healthier side. They can do nutrition consults, anything that you need. She can help you out. Just contact her at ahavet.com. Get your dog on a species appropriate diet. Here at Raw Dog Food and Company, we don't add anything to the food. It is meat, bones, organ, fat. Maybe there's double proteins. Maybe there's tripe. Maybe there's veggies. But there's no synthetic vitamins or minerals. Everything is pure. And if your dog is going to have a fighting chance in this toxic world, you got to get them on a species appropriate diet. So get over to rawdogfoodandco.com, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.